Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 149. This is Shrink Wrap Radio Live between Dr. Dave and Jerry Trumbull, recorded April 20th, 2008. Hello, world. This is David Van Nuys, otherwise known as Dr. Dave, welcoming you to Shrink Wrap Radio. And I'm located here in Sonoma County, California. And on the line, I have my good friend, Jerry Trumbull, in Denver, Colorado. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent.
I'm getting a double feedback, however.
Oh, no. What can you do about that?
I'm going to have to figure it out pretty quickly.
Okay,
I think I got it solved, I think.
Oh, good. And I'm just remembering that I need to open up my chat window, so in case anybody comes along that wants to chat with us, I'll be able to see them log in. So I'm just kind of getting all my different components lined up on my screen here.
So, good, and turn on your recorder as well.
Yes, thanks for that reminder. I actually remember to do that today.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm a little bit on top of my game, although I really wanted to review some of the web articles that you and I were going to discuss, and I wanted to get all of that kind of refreshed and in the top of my brain, and really didn't manage to do that. So once again, as always, we'll be shooting a bit from the hip.
Hey, it's a live show, right?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to tell you about a couple of developments for Shrink Wrap Radio that you might not be aware of, as well as, you know, it's pretty new stuff, so the listeners might not be aware of it either. One is that I've started to create feeds for the archived shows. As you know, I'm up to about 150 shows, but the main feed on iTunes will only show the most recent 75, so that leaves a whole bunch that aren't another 75, actually, that don't show up in iTunes and that in no way are, you know, dated because of the passage of time. For new listeners, they would be as interesting today as they were when they were first recorded. And so I heard from a couple of listeners suggesting that there ought to be feeds for those, and I wasn't sure how to do that. So I spent much of the past week figuring that out, and I don't know if they're showing up in iTunes yet, but they will pretty soon. You know, within a matter of days, I would guess one would find them in iTunes. And there is a menu on the Shrink Wrap Radio website now that says feeds, and if a person clicks on that menu, it's a drop-down menu, and then it gives three different feeds that you can subscribe to. What do you think of that, Jerry? Are you still on?
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm kind of trying to check it out. I'm on your site, shrinkwrapradio.com. I'm looking. This is on iTunes, right?
No, you should go to my site. Eventually, it will be on iTunes, but yeah, if you go to shrinkwrapradio.com, up at the top in the menu area, you should see an item that says feeds. Do you see that?
I see it there. Feeds, I got that. Main feed, 2005, 2000. Wow, you've been doing this a long time, Dave.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of amazing, isn't it? And there's another new menu item up there, which is transcripts. And I heard from a listener, and I hope he won't mind my putting his name out to the world. I don't think he will. His name is Jason Howard, and he wrote me and said, boy, it would be really nice if there were transcripts of your shows and of the interviews that you've done. And I think that's something that you and I may have discussed in the past, but that's work intensive and it's pretty expensive to hire somebody to do that. He actually does transcriptions for a living and generously offered to do them at half price. Well, I don't even feel I have a budget for doing them at half price, but he also said he'd be willing to do some for maybe even for free. So he did one, which is up there already as a PDF file. The interview with Doug Davis, Happy Birthday, Dr. Freud. And so I guess that was one of Jason's favorites. So he chose that one. And now he's working on doing a second one My thought is, and I'd be interested in your reactions, Jerry, there are different ways we could go on this. One is to see if I can get other people to volunteer to pick shows to transcribe, and we'd be getting them up that way. The other would be to try to come up with some kind of fund, either charge for transcriptions or ask for donations. What do you think?
Well, I love the transcription idea, and as we discussed many times in the past, I think it would be a great supplement to a beginning psychology course or even advanced psychology course to have a, what do you got, 150, well, not a totally 150 different guests, probably 120 to 130 different guests representing all different kinds of psychology. And having it in print form makes it possible to read it anywhere. And, you know, e-books are coming on strong now with the readers or that they have out, and that's one way to go, but there's nothing like a piece of paper.
Right.
Sound old-fashioned, but take it with you on the bus and don't have to worry about your earplugs and so on. But I think it's a great idea. I wonder if you have experimented with having it automatically transcribed with some kind of a voice recognition software.
Boy, it's I find it hard to believe that there would be some software that would be good enough to do that. And also, it wouldn't label who the speaker was, you know, when I was speaking and when the guest was speaking, although that might just be obvious. But if you find some software that you think would work, I mean, we could experiment with that. By the way, Honey Rococo is in our chat room. She said she had to restart the thing four times to even get the chat box to open. And we have
we know that she's quite tenacious. So.
Yeah, good. And we have Crazy Chicken Lady in the room as well.
All right.
Yeah. welcome, Crazy Chicken Lady. Glad to see you. I'm not sure if you're a regular listener or not. Let's see. So that's kind of the shrink wrap radio news. Oh, well, I guess maybe you were still reacting to... I mean, what do you think about volunteers versus paying for transcripts versus donations?
Wow, I don't know. Free is good. For example, the one you have up, I just looked at it. Looks very good. Nicely done. Good job there, Jason. And, you know, if listeners are willing to put in a couple hours on their favorites, I would recommend trying that out at first. If it proves to be popular, I don't know, do you think people would pay a buck or two, some kind of a download system?
Yeah, they might. They might. I'd then have to figure out how to get that all set up and all. So I prefer the volunteer approach. We'll see how that goes. I'll put this question up on a poll if I can get polling back. I just had the site upgraded to WordPress 2.5, and in the process we lost the polling feature. However, somebody has pointed me to another plugin that may restore it, so I just have to get around to doing that.
Very good. Always on the move.
Yeah. Well, we should, you know, we have Crazy Chicken Lady in the room here who's never heard Shrink Wrap Radio. So we probably should get on to some substantive stuff before too much longer here. But I know there's something important happened in your life that you wanted to give a little energy to, so let me create some space for that.
Yeah, thanks. I just learned this morning that my beloved sister-in-law, Joanne Trumbull, passed away early this morning. And I think she was just a few days short of her 70th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
She's wonderful. A wonderful lady who got breast cancer last year and spent a lot of time in surgery and then later in chemotherapy, went through the whole process, was declared to be, at least at the moment, cancer-free. What I've learned from other experiences is that is a often temporary situation. And in her case, it came back unexpectedly in her liver. And although she had back pain for a number of weeks, it was thought to be just, kind of a back injury, typical kind of thing. And although she had an appointment coming up with her oncologist, she didn't quite make it to that appointment. And it was just a matter of days before she went under and passed on to the next level, whatever that might be. And I've had a couple of deaths in the family recently, including my own son in 2005. Unexpectedly got pneumonia, didn't know it, and passed away. And it's just a wake-up call to all of us that our days are numbered. We're all marching forward one day at a time.
Right.
Young people mistakenly think that they've got an endless number of days. I know that from firsthand experience. And that's not true either. So it's the old hackneyed saying of, you know, one day at a time and trying to live in the moment, although I'm starting to question what that means. Sometimes when I'm taking a shower, I go, okay, I'm living in the moment now. I'm feeling it. And living in the moment for me seems to be mostly sensory, trying to keep that inner voice quiet.
Yes.
While I appreciate the sensory information, maybe it's because I'm in the shower. But I wonder, is there something more to living in the moment that I'm missing other than the sensory concentration? I don't know, Dave. Do you have any words of advice in that regard?
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to comment on that. And let me pass along to you that both Crazy Chicken Lady and Honey Rococo are sending you their condolences in the chat room. I wish you could open up that chat window so that you could.
I'm going to give it a try here while you're talking.
Okay, yeah. Hopefully you don't get kicked off or something. I know in the past there was some problem, but Crazy Chicken Lady wrote condolences to you and your family, and Honey Rococo wrote, "Oh, Jerry, this is so sad. I'm so sorry." And
thanks to both of you. Thanks to both of those chatters.
Yeah, and certainly I add my condolences as well. I feel badly for your loss, and we're dealing with that on our end too. I'm going to a colleague's 80th birthday today, so that's on the upside. And then a week from today, next week, I go to the memorial service for one of my colleagues that I worked with for quite a few years. So this reminder of our mortality certainly is all around us. You know,
when indeed. In fact, I was going to recall my mother who died in 2001 at the age of 86. And one of her major complaints as she grew older was that all of her friends were dying. Now we find ourselves in a similar situation. And I have to say, we probably should not be complaining about that. Because we're still alive. Maybe that's a selfish point of view, but it's kind of the last man standing or the last person standing. We look around. I've had friends dying on a regular basis the past 10 years. And what can we say? We get a little time here, a blink in the geological time frame, and then we pass on. And although I'm an atheist, I don't believe we go to heaven or any golden paved streets. It's very tempting to believe that there's some kind of energy that we may be rejoining or rediscovering the white light phenomenon. Or maybe that's just a local brain protection that we are fortunate to have. I was with my mother when she died, and it was quite an experience. Because she wore glasses all the time, and she never took them off unless she was going to sleep. But in this situation, she had her glasses off, and she looked a lot different. And the very moment that she was stricken, she got an expression on her face that looked like she was about 12 years old. I can't explain it exactly, but it was a look on her face that I had never seen before. And I thought, I was really amazed by that. She didn't actually die at that moment, but she went into a state which the hospice people informed me was fairly common, pre-death somnolence, or whatever you want to call it, I just hung out. Her heart seemed to be so strong. She had had a number of heart attacks, but it just kept pumping, and she just kept living on for a couple of days. And then she finally passed away. And I was there, and I was there with my sister-in-law, Joanne, who also passed away. And the good news is that Joanne and my brother, Bob, who unfortunately died at the age of 47, way back in, I think, 1984, they had five children. And all five children were able to be there with her in her last days. So that was a good thing. And her kids are just amazingly wonderful. To look at the five of them and think of their parents, I see different mixture of genes, and all of them extremely bright, all of them very successful in their endeavors. And it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, time goes on.
And the baton, and the over. Yeah, right, exactly. The baton gets passed on, and the energy continues. I take it you're not in the chat room because I don't see you in there. And Honey wrote, as for living in the moment, I always remind myself that I live where other people only vacation. And she goes on to say, and you should have lots of dinner parties with your friends. And Crazy Chicken Lady said, living in the moment to me is just being present to myself and others. And going back to your question of when you bring yourself into the moment, you're aware of the sensory aspect. And you say that as almost as if that's not a good thing or that's not enough. But maybe that is enough, actually, to be in the moment and to be fully in touch with your senses, to be fully aware of what's going on. It seems to me that's a lot of the focus of Zen meditation, is to have fresh senses, like baby eyes. I remember once you won't remember this, but you and I were walking down the streets of Philadelphia or someplace like that. And you know how sometimes in the cement, they put all this mica, so it's very sparkly.
Yeah.
And you reflected, you said something like, you know, if we were little kids now, we would be going, ooh, look at all the diamonds. Ooh, look at look how neat it is, you know. And yeah. I've never forgotten that. Whenever I walk over sparkly cement, that's kind of a reminder to me of that naive wonder and a reminder to return to that state. You probably didn't even know you'd given me that little gift.
Now, isn't it amazing how we have selective different memories and things that burned into one brain and forgotten by another? It's totally amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the beauty of having friends, I guess, to remind you of things that you might have forgotten, because I definitely forgot that one.
Right. Now, memory is one of the things that we're planning to talk about as we go on a little bit further. But before we do, I wanted to pick up on, you kind of cued me a little bit. You and I have had I'm stumbling over myself here. We talk sometimes when we're not on Shrink Wrap Radio. We get on Skype and we talk. And sometimes we do that a day or two before one of these shows. And I'm constantly saying, oh, Jerry, stop talking. That'll be so great for the show. And I'm trying to shut you up because I'm afraid that we'll just kind of dissipate all of our ideas and our energy. So there were a couple of good things that came up in our last conversation that I'm going to make an attempt to revivify here. And one you made passing reference to was, I was kind of speculating that when people have a white light experience or other sorts of near death or returning from death type experiences that people report, these very sort of high transformational things that they report, you know, they're, I guess there are basically two possibilities. One is that there's some other transcendental reality that they've just been in touch with. And the other is a more naturalistic explanation that has something to do with brain chemistry. And so we were kind of speculating, well, maybe the brain has a natural mechanism that's designed to make it good on the way out, as a kind of self-protective, built-in mechanism. And of course, we don't, at this point, we don't know for sure if that's the case or if the transcendental reality is the case, but it's kind of nice to think that it's there either way.
Yeah, and given the new, all this PET scan and reading of the brain without intervention, I guess eventually we'll get a case where we have a dying person hooked up. And then maybe we'll get some insight into what's going on in the brain during death. I mean, it's kind of macabre to think about that, but on the other hand, it would be interesting to know. I'll volunteer for that, by the way, if anybody,
okay. Okay.
Anybody's interested
to hook you up in your final moments?
Hook me up on the way. Hook me up on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
and even so, that probably won't totally end all discussions of, you know, it won't resolve the reductionistic question, you know, of, okay, no. So they're brain correlates, but that doesn't necessarily comment on what might be happening in other dimensions.
Exactly. And on the other hand, if we saw the hypothalamus light up in the reward centers or something, we might get some insight into it. I don't think it's going to really tell us any answers, at least not at first.
But yeah. Yeah,
it's interesting, this reductionist argument that I've heard you make this before, that
yes.
Somehow understanding all the parts, if this is a correct understanding of the concept, understanding all the parts won't necessarily lead us to understand the whole. Is that a good way to put it?
I think that is a good way to put it. I think maybe more than that is implied. One piece more that I'm not sure is implied in what you just said or not is that there can be different levels for understanding a phenomenon. You may understand it at one level, but that doesn't mean you understand it at all the levels.
Right.
So we may, you know, if we understood a lot about the atomic physics, I'm not sure that it would still help us when it comes to resolving an argument between a husband and wife. You
right.
know, that's happening at a whole different level.
I got you on that one. But since you mentioned atomic physics, I wanted to bring you back to that thought that we discussed regarding the nature of our being.
Yes.
You want to pick up on that?
Yeah, I did want to do that. It was stimulated by a video that I saw on TED.com, which I recommend to one and all as a really incredible series. And Richard Dawkins was speaking, and it was about objects, our sense of objects at the level that we operate in consciousness and the universe, you know, so that we look at a rock and that's an object, and this microphone in front of me is an object, my computer is an object, and as I look at my hand, even my hand would seem to be an object in the class of objects, just as those others are, even though, you know, I'm animal and they're mineral.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a sense in which we appear to be objects and we treat one another as objects. And if you compare that, say, the objectness of a rock, say, to the objectness of a whirlpool, because a whirlpool, there are whirlpools that are always there in certain spots, in certain rivers and in certain parts of the ocean where people go as tourists because they know they're going to see this amazing whirlpool there that's been there forever. And So there is a sense in which that whirlpool is an object. It's there. You've read about it, and now you can go and see it. So it's there, kind of in object land. And yet, it's constantly changing. It's just, it's a flow of energy, of molecules, and so on. And it's not the same whirlpool in this instant that it was in the instant before. And so we are more like whirlpools than we are like rocks. We know that all of our cells are replaced within, I've heard 7 years given. I've also heard that we have molecules in us that have come from the other side of the earth not so long ago, that more and more we're seeing that we are in fact all connected, and that we're all part of this flow, an energy flow. And so I remarked that we're kind of like a standing wave. You know, if you're familiar with electronics or wave theory, there's this idea of a standing wave.
Mm-hmm. So it's the form, not the content.
Yeah.
And in that regard, maybe we could segue into this concept of living forever on the internet.
Okay, yes.
Because that was something my son, Kip, he and I talked about this many, many times. And he was hoping to live long enough to make it to this singularity point, or whatever we want to call it, where, and probably this may be in the future, where we would be able to upload our neural circuitry. I remember Dr. Taylor, the lady who had the stroke.
Yeah, Jill Bolte Taylor.
Yes, she kept saying something that really caught my attention. She kept saying, "I am my circuits. I am my neural circuitry." And I was that was a concept that I turned on to as a kid, playing with electricity. And then when I learned that the brain and the nerve cells operated on electricity, I was totally enamored of that idea, that I am my electrical circuitry. And presumably if that electrical circuitry could be measured in some distinct point measurement of each individual brain cell, and assuming that we had figured out how memories are stored, it's conceivable that we could indeed transfer all of our neural circuitry into a internet program.
Yeah, well, there are ways. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, at that point in time, if you're still alive, there's another one of you living on the internet. It's kind of a freaky concept if you think about it, because first of all, you have to sleep, but the one on the internet doesn't have to sleep. So it's busy while you're sleeping, and it's probably got the same curiosities that you have. So it's checking out other things on the internet that you now don't know. So your internet you is building up a whole set of friends. You know, it probably goes to Facebook or MySpace or someplace and starts its own little thing. And you wake up one morning and suddenly you're falling behind. You know, but at any rate, if you were able to continue on, just think of the beauty of that, being able to check in with Bertrand Russell and ask him a couple of questions. What a deal, huh?
Yeah. You know what? Vis-a-vis that, a funny thought popped into my head the other day, which is that if Jung and Freud were alive today, they would have websites, right?
Yeah, they would, sure.
and probably Dr. Dave would have interviewed them, or at least would have made a very, given a hearty try. By the way, we have a new person in the room, Dieter, and Crazy Chicken Lady subscribes to the TED series on iTunes, and evidently Honey Rococo does as well, because she reminded me that somebody on one of those videos said that every time we drink a glass of water, we ingest a water molecule that passes through the bladder of Cromwell. Oh, doesn't that just make you feel wonderful all over?
Wow. I just ate a banana before the show here, and who knows where those molecules came from. I mean, they're probably someplace not in this country. And what was it Carl Sagan used to say? We are stardust.
Yeah, yeah.
Songs that use that same concept.
Yeah, you know? Sure. And I sometimes reflect on that. It does give me kind of a wonderful feeling. I mean, in terms of talking about death and so on. I mean, there is some literal level at which we are, you know, we're part of this universe and we ain't going away. Whether or not our self-awareness, our consciousness will stay or not, you know, that's up for grabs. But all of our little, all of our little tiny, teeny, weeny pieces, we're part of it. And yeah. And we're going to continue to be part of it. So on the idea of memory and the web, you know, we've talked in the past, we've sort of played with the idea of the web as a prosthetic device for human intelligence. I mean, I'm starting to see Google more and more as a prosthesis for my failing memory. And so I think it was a listener who brought my attention to a website called Evernote, and I sent you a link to it. It's in beta. I signed up for it. And the pitch there, as far as I understand it, is that and this goes back to our guest, Doug Davis, who we had a conversation with here on Shrink Wrap Radio Live, in which he referred to something called the Mimex, which actually was, I think, sort of a conceptual idea of a online memory that conceivably could be built sometime in the future. And it seems like Evernote really has moved in that direction. They're inviting you to kind of take pictures everywhere you go in your life and put them all on this site, and also all of your web clippings on the site, and to annotate everything and to leave voice notes on the site. And then at any point in your life when you want to look back, there are records of all of these places. Now, one of the features that appealed to me that where I can't quite see myself doing that as much as I wish I had such a collection going back to through my whole life. I mean, in a way, it would be wonderful to be able to go back and see all the stuff, get all these reminders of things that I've forgotten. On the other hand, I have kind of an ambivalent attitude towards that, because I think it might be so painfully poignant and bittersweet, kind of seeing the past and knowing that it's gone. But that aside, the practical piece of it that had a lot of appeal to me is it has a visual recognition system such that you can take a picture of a sign. Let's say I was going to go to Barcelona. That's fallen through. But I could have taken a picture of a sign that said Barcelona, and it would translate that into text. So that tag, if I later did a search on Barcelona, it would find that sign. Or I could take pictures of business cards. And this is what really appealed to me, because I've got a stack of business cards that have outgrown the little box I keep them in. So I'm constantly confronted with, okay, who is sufficiently unimportant to me at this point in my life that I can throw away their card and every now and then do a cleanup. I'm sure you've been through that. I like the idea that I could just, with my iPhone or my digital camera, snap pictures of business cards, get them on this website, and there they would be. I went through the FAQ, you know, frequently asked questions, and whatever they had there. I could not figure out how to get a digital photo that was not taken by my computer onto the site. I could take a picture with the built-in camera, but that doesn't work for me. I need to be able to take it with other cameras and then get it on there. So maybe because it's in beta, that hasn't been developed yet. But at any rate, I just talked a lot, but there it is. It's kind of moving in that direction of dumping as much of your memory content as you can, as you're willing to do, onto the web.
Yeah, I noticed their site says they are building what's been called a, quote, backup for your brain, unquote.
Yeah.
Very interesting idea. In fact, I think it was in our earlier discussion, we were talking about memory and the encoding of memories. And I was pursuing the idea that when you think of an event or an occasion in the past, you call up, you conjure up a picture, at least I do. I feel I have two theaters in my head, by the way. One is what I call the mind's eye, and the other one is what I experience in dreams, which is not occurring in the mind's eye. It's occurring somewhere else, but I digress. What I was trying to get to was the idea that you have a complete record in your head. You just don't have it completely accessible. You may have a tag on a particular memory that leads you into it. If you happen to think of the beach, for example, you may have a photograph or two of that. But if you try to put yourself into that scene, and I've tried to practice this, and it seems to have some validity, that you can actually look around. You can look to an area that's not in your little photograph or your mind's eye and see if you can see anything over there to the right. You know, was there other people? Oh, yeah, look, there's a dog over there. And then turn to the left and look away, or maybe walk out of your photographic memory of it and see if there's any more information there. It takes a lot of time to do this, by the way. It's not easy. You kind of just sit there and trying to keep this in focus. And then you'll get a little glimmer of the edge of this little photographic reality is expanding a little bit, and you will remember something else that you hadn't remembered when you first started this. And you'll go, yeah, that's right. So-and-so was there as well. I had forgotten them because they weren't in the photograph part. Does that make any sense?
I've never tried that experiment. I know you've done a number of very interesting experiments that, you know, with your dreams and so on, that require a fair amount of concentration. I think you've got some kind of good facility there for exploring your inner world. I'll have to give that a try. I must say, I remember you mentioned that to me the other night, and I haven't tried it yet. You know, I'm being reminded, you say it's all in our brain, and I'm wondering, do we really know that that's true? I'm remembering Penfield's work where when he stimulated certain portions of the brain during surgery, people would have this clear vision of something from the past. The example that I remember from graduate school is that supposedly this person suddenly could count the pickets on the fence in front of their childhood home.
But that
doesn't necessarily mean that all of the memories are in there. And maybe there's no way that one can verify whether they're all there or not. I'm beginning to get the sense that instead of a whole memory being stored in one place, you know, like in one slot, that memories perhaps are built up of little fragments of associations that are being pulled in from a lot of different parts of the brain.
Yeah, I think I agree. I tend to think of it as a kind of a holographic thing, you know.
Yeah.
In a hologram, if you look down at the fractal level, you see another little guy down there or whatever, and it may be that the memory is a pattern rather than a molecule. I guess that hasn't really been figured out yet. And it's amazing to me how slow this research is. You know, it's been 40 years since I got out of physiological psychology, and although I've kind of kept tabs of the information I can get on the internet, which is quite a bit, I'm appalled that it's taken so long. You know, I was hoping somebody would have this figured out by now.
Really?
I figured they'd see when I was in it, I was limited by the tools, and the tools in those days were little platinum iridium electrodes being slipped into animals' brains. A bad idea. It's like studying a radio by hammering a nail into it.
Right.
Oh, we hit the speech center. But I realized at that time, until we could read the activities of an individual cell at a distance without surgical intervention, we were not going to be able to figure out how the brain worked. But now that they're starting to simulate the brain on computers, we talked about that last time, I think, it looks to me like they're getting close, and it looks to me that things are speeding up. It seemed to me there was a whole period of time where not much was happening. But now I see that the application of this new tool, the computer, as well as the instruments that can read cellular activity at a distance without surgical intervention, means that we're kind of getting there. Now, the question is, if we were able to simulate every single cell in your brain, my brain, what properties would it have? Would it have consciousness? Would it be, you know, I mean, all these things pop up. I'm hoping to get some answers, Dave, before my wave form passes away.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, it seems like the progress really is accelerating. And 40 years, you know, hey, that's not so bad. There's been some real progress has been made, and it seems to be getting made at a faster and faster rate. So things really have are coming along. You know, there was another site that I wanted to mention that was referenced actually on Evernote. They mentioned something called jots.com, JOTTS.com, that they thought would work well in tandem with Evernote. So I went to Jots to see what that was about. And that's kind of interesting too, because on Evernote, they have this capability of taking visual information, translating it to text. Well, on Jots, they can take, among other things, they can take vocal information and translate it into text. So did you, in fact, get the email that I sent you that I dictated on my cell phone and should have arrived in your box as an email?
No.
No? No? Are you sure?
Well, maybe I don't think I missed it, but do you recall the title or date?
I think I sent it 2 days ago, and I think it was the day before yesterday, and it might say something about Jots in there somewhere, or be from jots.com or something. They might try doing a search on that. And basically it was, "Hi Jerry, I am talking to you. I am dictating this to you." And so of course, you know, you mentioned voice, you know, speech to text as a possibility for generating transcripts earlier. I've only experimented with this a little bit, but so far I am blown away that it is able to take dictation as accurately as it does. It also sends the message to me, so I can see how good a job it did. And so I sent you an email, I sent another friend a somewhat longer email, and in both cases, it was totally accurate. It hadn't made any mistakes at all. And
wow, that's impressive.
And the practical use that I see for me is I want, one of the features that they offer is a to-do list. So I put that site on my iPhone, and I want to be able to call up this number that I have on speed dial on the iPhone, and I want to be able to dictate to my to-do list so that when I'm going to the market or someplace with my failing memory, I can then take out the iPhone and look at the stuff on my to-do list. Now, of course, I could type it in on the iPhone, but as wonderful as that little keyboard is, it's easier to talk than it is to type. So, but I haven't figured out, again, that's sort of in beta, and I can't figure out how to make my messages go to the to-do list rather than to the inbox.
Okay, well, that's obviously something you can work out, but here's my question. You've had a digital recorder, and before that you had a little mini tape recorder and so on and so forth. And you could have done that then, but you never did.
No, I'm guessing. What? Go from voice to text?
No. Make a tape recording with old-fashioned technology 10 years ago on a mini tape recorder and take it with you to the store so that you could replay your grocery list while you were in the store.
No, that's not as good as having a visual list because with visual lists, you can hop around, you can see the whole thing at once, where the tape is sequential access, not as good.
I see.
So I'd have to keep replaying the tape.
Yeah, okay. I got you. All right.
Okay, so now.
But what I'm saying, by the way, is I think it's something that you'll never use.
unless you become
a complete compulsive and spend all of your time making notes, collecting information, and backing up your brain.
Yeah.
I guess then you have to start making notes about the notes you were making while you were backing things up, because that's part of your latest activities, right?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. I was just scanning the web notes here. I'm seeing that there's a lot. You never got into the chat, did you?
I never did, no.
Now, did you try and fail, or what happened?
No, I looked and searched and remembered the last time I tried it, I got kicked off, and I didn't want to risk it.
Okay. Honey writes, that's the uncertainty principle that determines exact location of atoms, molecules, cells for reassembly, plus all the forces that hold them together. I think I skipped something that she said earlier. She says, geez, I had to restart the thing times to get the chat box open. I bet other people, oh no, I've gone way back too far. We got to figure out how you can be watching this chat. Before we run out of time here, we were also going to talk about sort of the next update of a conversation that we've been having about animal intelligence. Because basically what this kind of ongoing discussion has been about in our own rambling fashion is non-human intelligence and, uploading our intelligence to the web, uploading our memories, offloading some of cognitive functions of being able to take our voice, change our voice into text or what we see into text, et cetera. And we also, on a previous show, we talked about animal intelligence, and a listener in response to that sent me a link to a website that showed elephants painting. Now, I had seen, I'd heard about that before, and I saw some videos before that of elephants painting, kind of very abstract looking stuff. And I thought, okay. It's good for making money off the tourists, but I wasn't overly impressed. This video.
No, elephants goofing around with paints.
Yeah. Yeah. This video, though, showed the elephant painting a very good outline of an elephant. It really looked like an elephant. Did you see that video?
Yeah, actually, I had seen it, and then you sent me a link, and I looked at it again, and then you sent me a couple of other links. I began to concentrate on it a little bit, and I found it quite interesting. For one thing, the elephant that is drawn is kind of a stylized elephant from a lower point of view. You know what I mean? The elephant seems tall. In fact, the elephant seems to be have a slightly humanoid form standing up almost. The front legs are much longer. And I was going like, wow, I wonder if that's an insight into the elephant's imagination of what an elephant looks like, or if it's just something that they've been trained to do. Now, in the movie, did you see the guy walk by with another painting, which was just flowers?
Yes, I did. And also the flowers looked a lot like the flower that this elephant drew. Did you notice that?
They were stylized. Yeah, they were stylized. I don't know, maybe the same elephant did the flowers, but it looked to me that the elephant had gotten really good at repeating the drawing of the flower.
Well,
and obviously, if you think about successive approximation and training and how you might bring that about, I'm not convinced that it wasn't just a very well-trained elephant.
Yeah, that's the conclusion I finally came to as well. And as a matter of fact, in one of the links that I sent you from the BBC, I think it was, they seemed to be suggesting that it was training. When I first saw it, I thought, okay, wait a second. There's got to be some chicanery going on here. Even though elephants, you know, are evidently elephants are quite bright and, but doing portraiture is something else, you know? And so yeah. I started to think about, well, you know, if I wanted to train an elephant to do this, how would I do it? And I even imagined the possibility of laying down some kind of a scent trail in the outline, you know, and then training the elephant to follow that scent because he's got his nose right up there against it.
That's a good thought. I hadn't thought of that. One thing I found interesting was that the elephant went back and retraced one of the lines which had come out a little thin the first time.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. Also, the heavier lines on the inside of the legs showed some evidence of a shadow. It was like they were putting a heavy line on the back of the leg to show it was in shadow. And I don't know. I think elephants are probably as smart as we are. They're just not driven to build machines and stuff the way we did. But I was on the site of the BBC, Not So Dumbo, it's called. And I couldn't help but notice the dung cam that they use to record by putting little video cameras in piles of dung to record what was going on inside the herd. And it made me think of what I'm going to be wearing this afternoon. I outfitted a bicycle helmet with a mini cam, a video camera. And, so I can walk around and, not be obviously taking pictures, but this little camera on my head is taking pictures. And I did an experiment which I put up on YouTube. I'll mention it. You can find it if you search on wild-eyed, you'll find it. And
just wild-eyed? That's wild-eyed. Okay.
Yeah, that'll be enough to find it. My granddaughter and I are both wearing them, and we're both riding bikes together. So imagine having and a split screen. You have an eye on each side.
Oh, but that sounds very interesting.
It's really hard to figure out, and it hasn't gained a lot of popularity.
It's not viral yet, huh?
But see, that's what we're getting at. We're getting at this mini recording of, why not just have a camera running, take the cartridge out at night and put a new one in and just record everything you do. And then pretty soon we'll be able to lay a track down with the thoughts that we were thinking during the, oh, well.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, Justin, what's it called? Justin is a guy, and now there's Justin.
Oh, yeah.
And Justine. Aren't they sort of doing that? They wear a video camera all the time.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time on Justin.tv, I think it is. And now, of course, they have a whole bunch of followers who are doing the same thing. So you can switch around into the almost always boring lives of a bunch of people with cameras on them or near them or whatever. And it's like, okay, nothing happening here.
Yeah, I haven't even bothered to check it out.
No, I went into it heavily because it was an idea that I had thought of, and people were, porno was edging towards that. Some of the first ones were young ladies that had cameras in their dorm rooms.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that era. Seems to have passed, or maybe it's not. Maybe I just passed. At any rate, it is interesting. You know, people would say, oh, well, you're spending too much time recording your life and you've stopped living it.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that will keep me from doing it, because I don't want people saying that to me, and I don't want to be doing that. But what you're suggesting is really, it seems to me that this is really getting pretty close to being feasible, where imagine that you're wearing a very, very tiny camera, say fits in your lapel, and it's kind of like one of these security cameras. Maybe it's not running continuously, but it's programmed to maybe take a still every X number of seconds or minutes. And, and you know, with the cost of storage coming down, I wonder at what point, I mean, maybe we're already there. Could you capture a whole life in stills? If you took a frame, let's say at 1 minute during waking hours, or even one every 5 minutes, and you took a small still frame.
Now let's just go to 30 frames a second and record actual lifetime, because storage is the only question there. You're just talking about reducing the size of the file.
Yeah, right.
We don't care about that, and in fact, we'll be able to upload periodically through the ubiquitous Wi-Fi net, and we won't have to even worry about mass storage, because it'll all be on the internet.
Yeah, so who's going to be the first person to do that, to upload an entire life or a great deal of it? And you'd want to tag it. I guess it would be tagged by date. So you could say, okay, well, what was I doing 5 years ago at this time on this day? And you'd be able to go to that right away and get an idea. You know, this almost sounds doable, Jerry. We're going to have to talk about this some more.
I think it's doable, but I don't think we want to do it, Dave.
No?
Listen, you're the guy that's afraid to go into Second Life, because it might take over your life, your first life.
Yeah, that's
now
true.
Now you're proposing that your second life will actually be your first life on record. And at our age, especially, we'll be looking at our movies from when we were in our 20s most of the time.
Yeah, except we don't have any. Hey, you know what? We're in our final minute here, so I want to thank the folks that were here in the background. By the way, you could have called in, folks. We do have a call-in number. And I forgot to invite anybody else. We are hogging up all the airspace. So, any last words you would like to say in the final 53 seconds, Jerry?
Oh, I'd just like to thank the listeners for the condolences. That's very thoughtful. And we'll all be moving along one day at a time. And if you could cue us in, Dave, we could do the sign out.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I'm just reading a little bit of what was written here where, I think I'd have to stop watching with my eyes and mind if I knew I was filming everything. Then I'd have to spend half my life watching the film. Connie says, exactly. Right. What I was doing 5 years ago was watching my life from 5 years before that ad infinitum.
Right.
So remember, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.